our reason for being here is precisely to understand India's position, understand what they want out of Copenhagen. I actually react very positively to India publishing this document because I think it is shows the seriousness with which they take the issue of climate change. The fact that they are modelling carbon emissions up to 2030, and obviously I talked to Minister Ramesh about this document, although I haven't yet read it, is positive. Figures that they cite in this document are at least consistent with some of the figures that have been put out by, say, Nick Stern, around where Indian per capita emissions need to be in his Nehru lecture in July. I mean, India is doing a lot. It is not true to say, and I'm sure the minister didn't say this at his press conference, that India is just going to carry on with business as usual, because India has got very stretching targets on solar energy, stretching targets on renewable energy, big ambitions on energy efficiency. So, you know, I react positively both to the meetings that I've had so far and to this document. And I think that India wants to be a deal maker, not a deal breaker in relation to Copenhagen. So I think that's sort of reason to be optimistic and positive, while understanding that there is a lot of hard pounding to reach an agreement at Copenhagen, because there are a whole set of complicated issues and domestic constraints that every country faces.
The Indian argument over the current negotiations appears to revolve around the fact that there is an agreed format for phase two and three of the Kyoto Protocol. Mm-hmm. And the only question was timing. It's not actually a question of cuts. They say that, you know, phase two, if you don't meet your targets in phase one, means that you take a third cut. You add an extra third for 1990 levels to 20. And, you know, you decide the time frame, but that's the agreement. And what they say is that Western countries, industrialized companies, have simply failed to live up to the promises they made.
Well, I think, to be fair, the minister said to me, and I'm not quoting anything he hasn't said publicly, that Britain has actually met its Kyoto targets and exceeded them. Mm. And indeed, he said that, I think.
He said it in Beijing.
He said it last week in Beijing. Look, I accept in this... And I think it's very important to say this, that common but differentiated responsibilities means developed countries have to lead. And it's very important to say that, because we do bear historic responsibility for the emissions in the atmosphere at the moment. The paradox or the puzzle that needs to be solved in these discussions is that, looking forward, we know that a lot of the growth in emissions will come in developing countries, and therefore everyone needs to be part of an agreement. We're not expecting India to cut its emissions between now and 2020, and that's something I made very clear to the minister, and I think it's very important to sort of put that on the record. What we hope India will do is do significant domestic action to reduce their carbon intensity, if you like, so carbon emissions per unit of output, both domestically and with international support. We hope they will do more as part of a Copenhagen agreement. That's why the Prime Minister put forward his financing plan in June of this year. And as I say, I come away sort of positive, with a positive view so far about Indian intent in relation to climate change domestically and also in relation to Copenhagen.
The G37 group of countries that have come under the umbrella have demanded a 40% cut, or at least by 2020. The question's in two parts. First is, what do you make of that, given that the EU, Britain, other countries have come out with different timescales, different bases?
Sure.
There is an accusation of unilaterally imposing a deal. That's from the Indian side, or at least Indian civil society. And the second one is, you mentioned up until 2020 that India, you didn't expect them to take any obligations. Post that period, given that India, China, South Africa have all come out with statements giving you a profile of their rising emissions,
sure,
what do you think of that might happen after 2020?
Well, look, these discussions are focused in particular on the midterm. The two most difficult issues that we face are midterm targets and finance, it seems to me, in the run-up to Copenhagen. The developed world has set out pretty clear objectives for 2050, including at the G8 summit in Italy. On the first question that you raised about percent. The IPCC has said that the developed world, on one scenario, should aim for 25 to 40 by 2020. There are different pathways that people have talked about. Nick Stern, in the speech that I referred to, talked about the world, if current emissions are 50 gigatons, getting to 35 gigatons in 2030, 20 gigatons in 2020. I think the publication today is consistent with Nick Stern's modelling. I'm not saying we endorse it as a British government, but it's consistent with Nick Stern's modelling for what Indian emissions need to be at. I think that's a sign that, you know, we're talking in the right language, and that as I say, that India wants to be a deal maker, not a deal breaker in this. As to the question of the midterm for developed countries, I think we need to go as far and as fast as we possibly can, and we need to be as ambitious as possible. We've said 34% by 2020 or 1990. We've said we want to do more as part of the European bloc for 2020 as part of a global agreement. So we need to push as hard as and as far as we can, consistent with a 2-degree deal. What we want is a 2-degree deal. That's what world leaders, in a way, mandated at L'Aquila. And I think that there are ways of doing that, and we need to show a pathway in the negotiations which is consistent with a 2-degree deal, and that's certainly what we're aiming for. As for the second part of your question, this is part of the negotiations. I mean, this is part of the question about when emissions in different countries peak.
This is the past 2020, what you might expect from the developing world.
For the developing world, exactly. That's one of the questions that we've got to resolve. It's not an easy question at all about when a global peak happens. I think I personally think a global peak is an important concept. We've said we need a global peak in 2020 because we think that's consistent with the science. But that's a matter for debate, and again, it's partly a question of fact and scientific fact progress. I think one important thing I just want to pick you up on in what you said in your premise of your question. You said you're not expecting India to do anything. I think it's really important just to repeat my point earlier. India is doing things. I mean, you know, India is not on a business as usual basis, and it's really important. And I think part of the reason of being here is, in a way,
to
acknowledge that, and to show that we're not kind of operating under myths. India is taking action. India takes climate change seriously. We want to work with them to see what can be done by 2020 and after, consistent with the kind of pathway I've been talking about.